We're about halfway through our series on the road to recovery, or I also think of it as a new beginning, an opportunity to turn a page in your life where you've tried to turn this page on multiple occasions and not gotten very far. Today we're talking about making changes in your life. You know, making changes is a pretty hard thing. Somebody told me before we got married that that men and women look at each other differently when they get married. For example, when a woman marries a man, she just expects he will change. And she finds out that he doesn't. And when a man marries a woman, he just expects that she won't change. And she does. Change. We don't like change. Somebody asked, how many Baptists does it take to change a light bulb in a church? I think it takes 15. Three committees of five each to decide what bulb and when it should be changed and who should bring the fried chicken for the dinner we're going to have as we change the bulb. Change. Two men were talking about the differences between how God sees our life and how we see our life. And one of the guys was thinking about a verse in the Old Testament that said that, thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Lance. That 1,000 years in our life, as we look at life, is but a day in God's point of view. 1,000 years to us is like a day to Him. The second guy was pondering that, and he thought, wow, that means that our life here is really less than one afternoon, or kind of just one afternoon. And then we're in God's presence. And the first guy, not to be outdone by thinking of something profound, said, you would think it wouldn't be so hard to behave this afternoon. That's what we're going to talk about today. How do you make changes in areas that have been so hard in which to make changes? there are lots of ways that things that we all need change in. When I think of recovery, and perhaps when you think of recovery or the word addiction, there are common things that come to mind, like alcohol addiction or drug addiction or compulsive spending or gambling. And certainly those things are addictions and things that are hard to change, but there are also a whole bunch of other things that are hard to change that typically are more socially acceptable in our culture, although they just eat our lunch. For example, my dad was a compulsive overworker. He left between 7 and 7:30 in the morning, came home 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night. Didn't think a thing about it. Now, we did. We thought a lot about that. He never thought a thing about that until he was about my age now. Overeating, anger, rage, fear, worry, discouragement, depression, trying to control myself or control other people, all procrastination, not that I'd ever deal with any of these things. I set a record yesterday. I think this was a record. Mindy asked me to do something yesterday, and I did it right then. I don't know if that's ever happened. Has that ever happened before? Read between the lines on that answer. Seth, can you move that couch out of the garden room and put it in the garage? I want to get rid of it. I don't know what came over me. I went to Cole and said, Cole, would you help me move this couch? Let's just do it now. He looked at me like, who are you? You look like my father. All right, by way of review, let's go through these. First step we looked at, realize I am not God. I admit I'm powerless to control my tendency to do the wrong thing and my life is unmanageable. There is something within me that keeps wanting to do something I know I shouldn't be doing or to not do something I know I should do. I want to be in control. I want to be God. I want the final say about my life. As long as I insist on doing that, then I've got a whole host of things that are going to eat my lunch. Second, earnestly believe that God exists, that I matter to Him, and that He has the power to help me recover. This is week two. Week three, commit all my life and will to Christ's care and control. That's moving from me trying to be the center of my life and trying to control everything If you were here that week, that was the trash can sermon. Over to this side, where I let Christ be, have care and control of my life. And then he starts to work on all those things in our life with his power instead of my power. Openly examine and confess my faults to myself, God, and someone I trust. We looked at this last week. Most of the time, there are a lot of us as Christians, we confess our sins to God. And of course, we already know those things. But we don't take that step of confiding in one other person. And as we looked at last week's message, there's some real power and some freedom in doing that. And you pick that person carefully. But there's some real power and freedom as we looked at last week. Today, we look at the V of recovery. Voluntarily submit to every change God wants to make in my life. Humbly ask him to remove my character defects. So today we're talking about what's the process of going along with God in that process of change. How do I make changes? I want to talk about why is change so hard and how do we make those particular changes. Romans 12, 1 and 2 says, offer yourselves as a living sacrifice to God, dedicated to his service, pleasing to him, and let God transform you inwardly by a complete change of your mind. Years ago when we were in Texas, I was an associate pastor at a church that we helped start. And after we'd been going about a year and a half, the guy who was leading our worship felt like God was calling him to another ministry outside of our state. And at the time, I think we only had about 30 people in the church, and that included kids. I mean, and so I went to our pastor and I said, I couldn't think of anybody who's going to lead worship. I said, Harold, what are we going to do for a worship leader? And Harold's got a real deep voice. He said, well, actually, Seth, I was thinking of you. My first reaction was, we can't be that desperate. But apparently we were. I could play guitar, but nobody had ever accused me of being a singer. I said, okay, I'm game. If you think I'm the guy, I'll do the best I can with it. So our whole worship team comprised of two people at the point. We had a gal who was a tremendous piano player and a tremendous vocalist, did the same thing. So she had a microphone on the piano, and me, who was an average guitar player and about an average singer. It was a very humbling team to be a part of. Every Sunday before worship, about 15 minutes beforehand, we'd finish our rehearsal, and I was just scared to death. And I would go into the men's room at the place where we were renting for our church start, and I'd go sit in the stall, not because I had any business to do, but because I was just trying to work out this thing about fear. And I mean, I went through verses that I was thinking about confidence and patience and trusting God, and I was praying to God, and I just assumed that after a couple months of this, that my fear would slowly dissipate, and if anything, it got worse. Say, what in the world's going on? Why is this getting harder to change instead of easier? So I went and talked to my pastor and told him about this. And as we talked about it, one thing became very clear. In my head, what I was thinking was that people were looking at me, and therefore it was very important for me to make sure I had the chords right and the words right. He said, Seth, you've got the wrong focus. He said, your job is to help people look at God. Focuses on yourself. And I thought, well, yeah. He said, just imagine as you're playing guitar and singing that God is on a throne up behind you, and your job is to help people do that. Now, an amazing thing happened to me. My fear went from about a 99 to about a 3. It illustrated the principle in the main verse we're looking at today. Offer yourselves as a living sacrifice to God, dedicated to a service pleasing to him. Let God transform you inwardly by a complete change of your mind. What I'd like for us to look at today is how do you do that? How do you change your mind? How do you change your thinking? On the inside of your handout, where do my character defects come from? And when I think about this, I think of sort of three different areas. One of them is my chromosomes. Hey, how do you spell out chromosomes? How do you say chromosomes? You spell it out. Oh, there's a sign for chromosomes? They've thought of everything. What is the sign for chromosomes? That's pretty brilliant, isn't it? Wow. There are things. There we go. I'll keep my day job. Your dad passed 23,000 chromosomes to you, and so did your mom. Lucky you. And those things play a role. We really don't know how much of a role in our predilections towards certain behaviors. But the Bible is clear, regardless of who your parents were and what those chromosomes are, that is no excuse for sin. It just happens to say that you may deal with alcohol and somebody else may deal with worry. Oh, lucky you and lucky them. Second thing besides chromosomes is circumstances. And this is a sociological reason. Character defects are often attempts to fill unmet needs. In my house growing up, even though my dad was an a workaholic, I admired my dad. He was the kind of guy that everybody loved. He was a great leader. He was very successful in business. And my dad also smoked regularly. And he was what they used to call back in our day growing up a social drinker. 2 to 3 drinks every night when he came home from work. Now, I admired my dad. There are a lot of things that I learned from my dad that were good traits, but there are some things I picked up from my dad that were not so good. And smoking and drinking were two of those things I wish I had not picked up from my dad in my growing up years. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. The third is my choices. My choices. This is really a theological reason. Or if you have trouble with the theological reason, my relationship with God, think of it as personal, theological and or personal. Our choices. I've heard from countless people, countless times, if I knew how bad something was that I gotten, that this would become such an addictive habit to me, I never would have started. Unintended habits. Choices multiplied over and over and over again, over months and over years, just seem to get locked into our framework. And why is it so hard to change them? There are four things I'd like to mention. The first is embedded thinking and habits. Embedded thinking and habits. Some of these things become a part of my life over a long, long period of time. And change isn't going to happen overnight. It didn't become a part of my life overnight, and it's not going to change overnight. Sometimes when I think about embedded thinking and habits, I also think about things that are familiar. We may not like them. We may not like the habit. But one thing we do like about it is it's familiar. It's like wearing a pair of comfortable shoes. When I was growing up, one of the things I hated was when my mother took me shopping. Because whenever she took me shopping, it meant two things that she was going to buy I hated. I hated wool pants that were not lined, and I hated new nice shoes. It's like walking around with concrete around your feet. It took forever for those things to kind of loosen up. I run, and when I buy a new pair of running shoes, it takes a while for those new running shoes to kind of get loosened up. It's easier just to run with my old familiar pair of running shoes, even though they may do damage to my knees or my ankles or my feet. Sometimes embedded ways of thinking, you'll hear things like this. Well, that's just the way I am. That's embedded thinking. Number two, because I identify with my defect. Over time, without even knowing it, I identify with my defect. It's just like me to fill in the blank. You identify with your defect. As mentioned about my dad smoking and drinking, there was something in me that wanted to be like my dad. Now, I wish I could have just segregated out the good things. Confident, leader, successful, People just loved being around him. But you know what? When I decided I was going to emulate my dad, I didn't know it was really a package deal. And there was something about smoking when I was in high school and drinking when I was in high school that made me sort of feel like my dad, or that I was kind of identified with my dad. Now, I never could have put words to that back then. But there was something about my identity that was shaped through those activities, smoking and drinking. And again, I'll talk about some more of that in a minute. The third is inducements. There are payoffs. Now, they may not be payoffs I particularly like, but there's something that I gain from this particular behavior. And here, we get tripped up between our stated reasons for doing something and our real reasons for doing something. If you had asked me in college, "Seth, why do you smoke?" I would have told you, and here I'm thinking of my stated reasons, the reason I smoke is because it helps me relax. It helps me just kind of unwind. Helps me chill out. Now, those were the only reasons I was aware of why I smoked. And when I decided I really didn't like smoking and I was going to give it up, what I was giving up in my mind was a way of relaxing and chilling out, unwinding. And it was hard to give up smoking if that's what you're giving up. What I was not aware of is some of my real reasons for smoking. I don't know anybody that started smoking because they liked that smoke going down into their lungs. Everybody I know started coughing like you were as sick as could be. I thought back about, I began to think about this when I really wanted to quit and found it a little bit harder to quit than I thought it was. What was really motivating me? There were a number of things. Part of it was I wanted the acceptance of some friends at school. I wanted to be in. I wanted to be thought of as cool. I wanted to be respected. Another thing is I felt older, not that I was any older or acted any older, but there was something about the feeling of being older when I had a cigarette in my hand and a drink in my hand. Something about my identity again. Now, if you'd asked me back then why you smoke, I wouldn't have said any of those things. But those were the things that were driving me underneath. And once I began to see how stupid some of those things were, it was a lot easier to give up smoking after that. Our payoffs, oftentimes our hidden payoffs, the things we're not aware of, are what keep us locked in. And then fourth, because Satan discourages me. Let me say one other thing about smoking and drinking for me. Another thing I realized was that it was kind of nebulous, but there was something about being able to stand out on the porch of my apartment with a drink in my hand or a cigarette that said something like, "I'm on top of my world enough that I can sit out here and just enjoy it." It became sort of a symbol of control, or a symbol of success, or a symbol of peace. And once I saw that, I thought, that's stupid. All those things are stupid. It doesn't give me any control. It's not a statement of control. It's not a statement of peace. Again, a hidden payoff. Number four, because Satan discourages me. Satan is the accuser of the brothers, Revelation says. You could have been here all 4 weeks, and you'll hear this week's message. And on your way home, you'll be motivated to do something about change. And you can be sure that Satan's going to be whispering in your ear, "Who do you think you are? You've tried to change this so often. You think you're going to change this time?" And he's just going to try to take you down this whirlpool and just to where you, "I don't know if I'll be able to do that." That's one reason why it's hard to change, is Satan gets involved in this. Okay, let's take the rest of this time. How do I cooperate with God's change process? We looked at Romans 12:2. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. If I get in the boat, does your boat have, Mike, does your boat have autopilot? If you put autopilot to go west, and then you decide that, no, I want to go east, but you forget autopilot's on, can you still steer the boat around towards the east?
Momentarily.
Okay. Okay. And then what will happen?
It turns itself right back around.
Okay. All right. And let's say you think, dang. And so you turn it back to go east. What's going to happen? Okay. Momentarily, you can go east. But then the boat just automatically going to kick in and go that. Okay. That's our autopilot. Every one of us has an autopilot. And when it comes to addictions or things you want to be free of or bring changes to your life, it's really, how do I overcome that autopilot in me? Seven things. Number one, focus on changing one defect at a time. Focus on changing one defect at a time. You may have been here and you wrote your list last week, moral inventory. You've got a list of 20 things you want to change. If you just took five of those and said, okay, I'm going to go after these five, I've got a pretty good idea if they're tough stuff. Within about a month, you're not going to change in any of them. At least that's been my personal experience and my professional experience. We used to say when we were, or I used to hear when we were in Texas, and I was taking history classes, that in the old West, up in the mountains, when a family man, say he had five kids, wanted to bring home something for dinner, he could shoot with either a shotgun or a rifle. If you shot at a herd of deer with a shotgun, you may hit like 10 of them. But you're going to go home hungry because they're all going to run away. If you want to bring a deer home for dinner, you take out a rifle with a scope and you just focus on one. And you hit that deer in the right place and your family's going to eat that night. The same is true for areas of big, catastrophic change in your life. Take one. Be specific. Pick one. Proverbs says, an intelligent person aims at wise action, but a fool starts off in many directions. For some of you, you should just take that moral inventory list and say, Lord, what's one? I just want to make a difference in one of these. And focus on that one. number two, focus on victory one day at a time. Focus on victory one day at a time. It's real, and I've had this in my life, and I hear people say this, you know, they hit bottom and they say, I'm never going to take a drink again. I'm never going to smoke again. I'm never going to overspend again. I'm never going to eat ice cream again. I'm never going to yell at my kids again. Well, if I want to change any one of those things, ever again is not likely to happen to me and probably to you. But today, I have grace for today. God did not give me grace for this week yet. And I don't have grace for this month yet. I don't have grace for this year yet. I don't have grace for the rest of my life yet. For the ever again part of my life. I do have grace for today. That's kind of an interesting thing. Let's look at the verse, John. Jesus said to pray this way, give us this day our daily bread. Why can't we just pray, you know, God, we're going to be hungry all our lives. Why don't you just bring it all in? Because there's something magical about that daily thing, about going to God daily, depending on Him daily, trusting Him daily to deal with my stuff daily. Matthew 6:34 says, don't worry about tomorrow. Each day has enough troubles of its own. Well, yes, it does. No problem filling up the trouble tree. You know, we live in an era of instant everything. When I was a senior in college, I was taking Greek. Greek was a hard thing. And so I decided I needed to stay up at night, and I started drinking instant coffee at night. I didn't even know there was real coffee. Folgers crystals is what I started with. I hated coffee, and I thought I need to get over that hate pretty quick, and so I doubled the amount of instant coffee in my little coffee cup and didn't put anything into it. And after about a week, I think I fried every taste bud in my mouth. And when I started adding stuff to the coffee and the regular, it didn't taste so bad after a while, you know, instant coffee. You know. instant popcorn. We've got this thing at our house now, Mindy buys. This is brilliant. Somebody was marketing towards me when they made this. They make these bags now, frozen vegetables. You don't have to open it up. You don't have to add anything. You hardly even have to read the directions. Put in the microwave and hit 5 minutes. That's my kind of cooking right there. We also want instant spiritual growth. And I will tell you, there is no such animal. In areas that have been difficult in your life, it is a day by day by day by day battle. Daily. Think about one day at a time. About 20 years ago, I came to that great, great time in life where you couldn't gorge yourself with any kind of food you wanted to and expect it just to fall away somewhere. I remember at 35 years old, after Christmas, that whatever I ate for Thanksgiving and Christmas that normally just went away in January and February was still there. It's just strange, walking around with this little pot belly. And I started a low-fat diet at age 35. Did that for about 15 years until that got harder and harder and harder. Then Mindy helped me get started on the Atkins diet. Been doing that for about 5 years, or modified Atkins diet. But I can tell you in my experience with diets that anytime I say, okay, I'm going to lose 10 pounds in the next 2 months, I have just set myself up for failure. Because you know what? I'm not going to lose 10 pounds in 2 months. And somewhere along the line, like if a week goes by and I haven't lost anything, I'm going to get discouraged. I'm going to say, what the heck? Who cares? And go right back into the same thing. I don't even have to make a goal for this week. It's triathlon season is upon us in a few months. And it's going to be a few months, and I'm going to be out there swimming, lugging around whatever I happen to be carrying with me at the time. And getting on that bike and lugging around with me whatever I happen to be carrying at the time. Usually it's right here. Or running in the heat of the early or the late morning, and that's where it really galls me, that I'm carrying around whatever extra weight I'm carrying. So I'm at that place of the year where I am motivated to lose weight. I've been a good boy for about a week. You know how much weight I've lost in a week? None! I don't have grace for tomorrow. I don't have grace for the end of next week. I have grace for lunch. You know, it's kind of funny when you think about it. Most of the time we sit down before a meal to say grace, you're thanking God for food. Heck, at my part of life, I'm saying grace to help me to stay away from some of that food. If I want to be on a diet, and I've been on a diet for 20 years, all I have to think about is the next meal in front of me. If I win some battles with that next meal in front of me, you know what? I'm going to be doing okay. Don't have to think about a year from now or 2 months from now or a month from now, all that stuff. Day at a time. Number three, focus on God's power, not willpower. As soon as you say about a problem, oh, I can handle it, or you tell your wife or how I can handle it, you have just cut yourself off from God's power. God just says, fine, go ahead. You want to handle it? Good luck. Most of you are parents. Remember when your kids are little, there's something they want to do, and you know they're not going to be able to do it. And you say, hey, let daddy do that for you. No, I want to do it myself. There are times as a parent you just have to say, okay, go ahead. Until I get so frustrated and so angry, daddy, would you help me? And you know what happens? The power starts on again. Spigot's back on. Water's flowing. Jeremiah says, God says, can a leopard take away his spots? It's a great analogy, isn't it? There are some spots in our life that we're not going to be able to change on our own. Nor can you, who are used to doing evil, now start being good. And then Philippians 4:13 says, I can master everything with the help of Christ who gives me strength. You know, sometimes I think about humility being such an important part of the change process and humbling ourselves before God and before people. Sometimes when I hear people talk, it's like humility is the worst of virtues. Does that mean you just walk around beating yourself all the time? That's not humility. That's masochism. Humility is just like your little kid looking up and saying, Daddy, could you open this for me? He says, sure. When I think about humility or trusting God's power, the two words I think of is to be delightfully dependent. Delightfully dependent. And there are areas in my life right now that I'm working on in me. Every day I want to be delightfully dependent on God for change. Number four, focus on what I want, not on what I don't want. Philippians 4:8. Fix your thought on what is true and good and right. Think about things that are pure. Think about all you can praise God for and be glad about that. If you are trying to curb your sex appetite, do not go home and say, I'm not going to think about sex. I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to think about it. Because you know what you're thinking about. Whatever has your attention has you. Whatever has your attention has you. If you focus on what you're trying not to be, you're going to find your focus being on what you're not supposed to be. If you put your focus on what God wants you to be, you have a tendency to move more in that direction. For a few weeks, Mindy and I have been at Alex and Michelle's small group talking about marriage. This past week, I was the case study. When I was a newlywed husband, much to my shame, I found myself being mentally, not verbally, but mentally critical of Mindy in all kinds of stupid things. And it bugged me because I know it was stupid and I didn't want to be this way, but somehow I couldn't turn off that little negative counter thing going on, that little merry-go-round, on and on and on. And I tried and I couldn't, and finally, you know, the negative thoughts, is almost like they were building and building, and they had a life of their own to where she could see it in my attitude. Something was wrong. And so we'd talk about those things, and it kind of like the merry-go-round stopped for a few days. And then it started up again, negative, critical thoughts, just between here and here, on and on and on again. Until about 3 weeks later, she noticed it in my attitude, and we talk about it again. And I was just getting absolutely nowhere in the change process. God, help me to be accepting, help me to be kind, help me to be patient. I was getting nowhere. Absolutely no change happening inside of me. I ran across a verse, which for those of you that were in the group, I did not mention this verse. Proverbs 5, 18, and 19. Great verses. Husbands, it says, may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. And the last part says, let her affection fill you at all times with delight. When it says, may you rejoice in the wife of your youth, in the Hebrew, it doesn't mean, well, I hope you'll rejoice. It's a command. May you rejoice in the wife of your youth. I read those verses as a young newlywed husband, and all of a sudden it hit me. It's not that I'm going to be happy because she's going to make me happy. I'm either going to rejoice in the wife of my youth or not. That choice just lies straight with me. Let her affection fill you at all times with delight. It was like there was a gate there. Would I open the gate? And let her affection fill me at all times with delight. Well, every time I started to think about some negative critical thought or started to pull away some way, I thought about those verses. May your fountain be blessed. May you rejoice in the wife of your youth. Let her affection fill you at all times with delight. And then I acted on those verses. Began to relate to her as if those things were true already. You know what happened? The feelings just kind of came along. They were a couple days behind my actions and my thoughts. But the feelings came along afterwards. I memorized Proverbs 5, 8, and 9, 18, and 19. And over the years, I've memorized a whole bunch of verses. In fact, these are verses that over the last few months I'm currently memorizing. It takes me 4 months to learn one verse. Now, I don't just learn one verse and then start 4 months later. I try to do one a week. But it takes. But this one, the first one here is November 11th of 07. It's almost ready to come out of this pack. I've been working on this puppy for about 5 months. Now, why? Because these verses have the power to change my autopilot. Like turning off the negative merry-go-round going on in my head. And instead of being Carl critical, being Ralph rejoicing towards my wife. Number five, focus on doing good, not feeling good. Focus on doing good, not feeling good. It's a lot easier to act your way into a feeling than to feel your way into an action. People ask me every once in a while, Seth, do you like to run? You know, it's sort of that edge of contempt, like only a moron would like to run. Somebody masochistic like you would like to run. I've been running since I was in grad school, on and off. And you can add up the number of times I've liked running in about 32 years on one hand. Most of the time while I'm running, I hate running. I'm going, what kind of idiot are you out here doing this? And for about an hour, do you like swimming? No, I don't like swimming while I'm swimming. And for about an hour before I'm getting ready to go swimming, I'm trying to think of anything to do besides swimming. Maybe I haven't backwashed my water pick in a while. Do you like biking? You know, when I bike, I'm not out there just kind of doing the casual. You know, you're working hard at this stuff. No, I don't like biking. I think maybe I've liked biking once in 5 years. But you know what? As soon as I turn into our little cul-de-sac after my 30-minute run, I love running. I just love being a runner. And you know what? I love being a runner for about 47 more hours. And then it starts again. Oh, today's the day I should run. Oh, I don't want to run. Maybe I'll run tonight. Which means it'll probably be Friday before I put my shoes on. I hate running for about an hour. But I love running for the next 47 hours. Now, the same principle is true with a whole lot of things in life. If I wait until I feel good to run, I'm never going to run again. I'll never dive in that pool again, especially in Speedos at age 55. Please don't come to the Irvine pool when I'm swimming. You'll never get that out of your mind. The AA folks put it this way, fake it until you make it. Act the way you want to until you get there. I listen to Dr. Laura when I'm riding around town, going to some appointments or something during the day, and virtually every day I hear her give the same sermon to some poor soul. I just don't love my husband anymore. I'd rather not be married at all. And she tells him, listen, woman, you've got kids at home. You've got something to make here. You act like you love, like you're just falling over in love with that guy for a week and then call me. I hear some people who call back. And they say, you know what, Dr. Laura? It worked. It's not my husband. It's me. Back of your handout. Number six. Focus on people who help me, not hinder me. If you don't like getting stung by bees, don't go by the nest. If you're trying to stop drinking and stop smoking, don't say, well, honey, I'm going to go down to the bar. I'm just going to eat peanuts and talk to the guys. Spend some time with people who will help you. Last week we talked about making taking a moral inventory. And I got a feeling that for those of you in a small group or already have somebody close in your life to talk to, got a feeling most of you, of those folks, have already talked to somebody about one item on that list. But it wouldn't surprise me if, for those of you who are not in a small group or don't have that kind of network already in place in your life, if you did the admitting to God and admitting to myself and put the red piece of paper on the cross but haven't talked to somebody else. That's pretty common. May 20th, that's right, May 20th, we are starting Celebrate Recovery here at our church. And Mike and Mike Cups and Mike Wallace are putting this together. And that's going to be a place where you'll have somebody to talk to about the issue that's eating your lunch. Nobody's going to change a big area in your life by hearing me talk for 8 weeks and getting principles. It's not enough. The change required is too big. It requires some other people to be involved. Focus on people who help me. Proverbs 27 says, iron sharpens iron, so people can improve each other. And number 7, focus on progress, not perfection. Focus on progress, not perfection. I heard somebody on the patio last night. They didn't know I overheard them, but they were saying, you know, I've been working on this stuff for 5 weeks and I haven't made any progress at all. I wanted to say, well, duh. This is something that's been going on for decades in this person's life. 5 weeks? Remember the principle of the beachhead. God establishes a beachhead in our life, way out there on the sand. And little by little, over the course of our lifetime, he works to move that thing inland. And eventually, he overtakes the island. Philippians 1:6 says, God who began the good work within you will keep right on helping you grow in his grace until his task with you is finally finished. Sometimes we trip ourselves up by saying, but I should be farther ahead than where I am. And I say, what? We seriously underestimate the power of sin in our life. And we seriously underestimate the amount of change that's required to bring about this kind of change of my nature. If you've had a parent, I mean, if you're a parent and you've had kids, you don't expect your 7-year-olds to hold down a job. They don't get discouraged because they can't bring in the kind of money you bring in. They're only 7-year-olds. If they go out and sell lemonade out on the front porch, you're happy for them. That's how God is with change, big change in areas of our life. He didn't expect you to be a 27-year-old holding down a job, looking at your next promotion. For some of these things, we're 4-year-olds and 7-year-olds change. Celebrate small wins. Now, having said that, I want to finish up with one other thing. There are likely some of you that have a rattlesnake in your life. And in that area, you cannot afford small wins. If your kid's about to touch a hot stove, there's a time in a parent's life, probably dad's, where you're going to gulp and you say no, and he reaches up anyway, and you're going to let him touch that hot stove. He'll learn what no means, that's a good thing, and he's going to learn not to touch hot stoves. But if your kid's about to pick up a rattlesnake, you're going to take out a hatchet and knock that thing off. You're going to whack that head off as soon as you can. There's some areas of our life where you can't play around with rattlesnakes. If you're involved in an affair, you've got one phone call to make as soon as possible. A very brief call. It's over, period. I will never talk with you, see you, have anything to do with you again. I'm so sorry. Period. If you are thinking about an affair, if you are infatuated with somebody, you have got to watch your interaction with that person, severely cut back the amount of time, the energy your heart's giving to that person, a rattlesnake to be dealt with. If there's something you're doing that's illegal, take out a hatchet. Cut that thing off the head. Let's pray together. Father, there's some folks here that probably need to cut off a rattlesnake today. And they need to do it quick. Give them the grace to do it. There are probably a whole bunch of us today that just need some encouragement. That it's okay to not have this thing down by next Tuesday. But to celebrate the small wins. To break this down into little bite-sized pieces. To take it a day at a time. Encourage the hearts of your people. There may be some of you that are out there and you've been beating your head against the wall doing everything you know to do. But the idea of being plugged into God's power. It's not enough to know that God can give you power. You have to call out to Him. Here, Daddy, could you open this? You have to let God be engaged with you. To humble yourself with Him. Reach out to Him. And simply say, I can't do this. And then invite Christ into your life. Father, there's a whole bunch of us here this morning, and each of us have different things we're dealing with. And I just pray that you would clarify for every person here what it is you want them to focus on today. And to make a priority each day this week.